tonight on Big Head Mode, we are reviewing Banner Saga. It's come out on consoles, and we're going to be bashing a review out for that. We're going to be talking Ganondorf, a new segment called Character Select, where we focus on a character from the gaming world, examine their life, everything about them. I'm joined by Carlo and Bardia. Guys, you excited to talk about Ganondorf, an unsung hero of video games?
Maybe the real hero certainly of the Zelda games.
No, absolutely not.
Oh, he could be, Bardia. I've got some interesting facts about him I bet you didn't know.
I'm sure.
Yeah, well, we'll get to the bottom of Ganondorf's story and more all coming up on 2RRR's only gaming show, Big Head Mode. Hello, hello, hello.
Hey,
welcome
Ben.
To Big Head Mode. I am Ben O'Brien. I'm your host, joined by my two co-hosts in two different sidecars. It's a very unwieldy bike. Carlo Ritchie.
Hey, I think this is a very unsafe means of transport.
Look,
it's also very
get you through the night,
inefficient on fuel.
But well, no, it's a motorcycle. It's really efficient on fuel, and it's got two sidecars, which makes it more stable. Both of you are wrong.
I said unwieldy, not unstable.
It's not unwieldy if they're both like nailed
on.
Yeah,
this
turning a car
thing is not easy.
It's just like a. It's
I don't
you're wrong.
You ever play a heavy character in Mario Kart? Not recommended. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't do it.
Well,
he's got you there, Bardia. If that is your real name,
which it is, Bardia McKinnon.
And
is
I.
His name.
It's great to meet you guys.
Look, we got a lot to talk about, guys. Love to talk on the show.
Busy week.
I mean, we have had. I mean, since our last show, we had RTX. We had our RTX. After our show, first ever sold out show.
Yeah, thank you for.
Oh, thanks everyone.
Applauding
please,
ourselves.
Please.
Thanks,
everyone.
Adoring
calm
fans
down,
in the studio. Oh. No, thank you to anybody who is listening to the show at home on the podcast or on the
maybe
radio waves.
I mean, any new
listeners? If you came along, thanks for coming.
But it was a pretty big weekend of. We had a panel at RTX as well.
Yep.
I mean.
It was RT exceptional.
Like, I know we did a full post PAX, but like, it's hard to do a full rundown on RTX because A, we weren't there very long. B, it was incredibly hot. I mean, you've probably by now, if you're interested in RTX, read the Kotaku review, which basically summed it up. Like, swelteringly hot.
Yep.
Huge lines for all the panels.
Huge lines for everything.
Yeah.
Except the toilets.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think it was a queue of about like 150 people to get a coffee.
And the photos from the lines getting into the convention center for the second day, ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Yeah. But overall, like, you know, it's interesting. Like, I had a thought earlier this week that so many people go to the RTX to see Rooster Teeth.
Well, that's probably the sole reason a lot of people go.
It makes you wonder, like, do they even need a convention? Because they could totally just do like a Sydney festival, you know, Rooster Teeth festival. Come down, have like 15 ticketed events where they just do Q&As and shows and stuff, and then it's like bang.
What's the difference between that and what they did though?
Well, like you buy a ticket to
the things that you want to go
see, the panel you want to go to, and you've definitely got access. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
You're not like hanging out in a hot box for a weekend
because that might be
lining up for an hour and a half, hoping to get to a thing.
I feel like if people did that though, it'd be misconstrued as like, oh, they just want money for their panels. Like they just want like it seems like a cash grab.
I think
I get your point though.
An expo is a good way to do it, I suppose. There were just logistical issues that were, you know, the venue.
I mean, well, it's their first time down here as well. So it's like, I mean,
they have got a new venue for next year already now.
Totally.
At the,
I mean,
Sydney, what is it, the Darling Harbour
Exhibition Centre. Yeah. Remember the first PAX Australia? That was a bit, like, it was a bit sort of all over the place, but.
It was a bit, but I mean, that first
compared PAX, to the next year.
The first, I mean, PAX, like, still did have, like, a really strong identity. I mean, like, they had. It's definitely gotten better, but, like, it's still kind of. It was easily. There was no denying it was a convention. Whereas I've had so many people ask me who didn't quite know about RTX or get what it was about, say, like, you know, so what was there to see besides the panels? And it's sort of like, well, they did this and that. Like, there was a couple of little Rooster Teeth related things. There was a huge store that had a queue the whole time.
You had to queue in to get into the queue.
For me, it was the feeling that I had at RTX, because I don't really know anything at all about Rooster Teeth or any of their affiliated brands. Like, I've watched their heist videos. And I watched Red versus Blue maybe 10 years ago, whatever it was. So for me, it was like being at an expo where everything was dedicated to one thing that you knew nothing about. So nothing made sense, you know? Like, but when you go to...
You're also not going to be buying a ticket to this thing.
Like, when you go to PAX, for example, because it's a convention, so, you know, if you really like indie games, you've got indie games there, you like tabletops, you like new release games.
But it's the same
deal. There's a real diversity there.
Yeah, that's true.
Whereas this was, it's an RTX convention. So it's various different things and platforms to concern RTX. Yeah.
Although I guess Buddy is right. Like, you know, if you weren't media, you wouldn't go to that.
That's really true.
I mean, you specifically wouldn't go. If you were buying a ticket, you wouldn't buy a ticket. Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's their focus. Like, I mean, to be honest, they don't need to, really. You know, part of me was like, you know, it would be nice if this event kind of was more accessible for people who didn't know about Rooster Teeth as a way to kind of bring them in. Mm. But then I guess, like, they don't really need to do that.
I think they just underestimated how gangbusters it was going to, like, how popular it was going to be.
Yeah. To be honest. I mean, there's a lot of statistics going around from, you know, outlets covering the event that I didn't realize. Like, I didn't realize that of their fan base, 1.8 million of them are Australian.
We're the second biggest
market.
Which
is incredible.
1.8 million.
1.8 million of their fans are just Australian.
10% of the population.
The biggest premiere for Laser Team was in Australia.
Yeah.
Like,
it's not 10%, is it? 5% of
the population. They've already made over $1 million from Laser Team, by the way, and hasn't even had, like, mainstream release yet.
That's incredible.
Isn't that nuts? They're just, like, they defy logic. They're like superhumans.
You saw the film. What did you think, Ben?
I thought it was all right, actually.
Because there has been some criticism.
We did have a very lucky screening, because we went and saw it in Burwood. And Bernie Burns, you know, the founder of Rooster Teeth, was still in Sydney, and it was pretty clear he was going to go to the event cinemas in George Street, because that was the biggest screening in the world, I think, 800 people. And then, like, he just comes out of nowhere at the end of our screening and does a Q&A, which none of us are expecting, in Burwood of all places.
He must go around. Now, he must have done...
Because
I guess so.
The film has gotten a little bit of criticism about the lack of diversity in the cast, of women.
Well, it was that one Kotaku review. I think it's fine, to be honest. Mm. It's funnier than I thought it would be, like, more consistently funny than I thought it would be. Rooster Teeth's track record, I think, of their style, like, if you're basing it on Red vs. Blue, which I guess is the biggest narrative work they have to compare it to, is, like, it's a lot of funny jokes, and then when it tries to get dramatic, it gets pretty corny.
I think...
And that's what I was expecting. This, like, some good jokes, kind of corny narrative, and luckily, like, the jokes were way more plentiful, the characters were way more likable, and the corniness was kind of, like, to a minimum.
But it's like corniness, especially in like Red vs. Blue, works because that is, I feel like that gels really well with what the show is and the tone of everything.
Yeah.
It's not trying to be anything that it isn't.
I mean, for a Kickstarter film, you know, it's incredible. And I think what it's going to do is it's probably the best thing that Rooster Teeth has made to bring in new people. You know, it's going to be the perfect thing. In fact, it's how Bernie described it in the Q&A. He was like, when we were trying to make a movie that catered to new audiences and also our fans, we didn't want to make something that was, like, so niche just for our fans that people didn't get it. We wanted it to be, like, a thing that when people are trying to explain to their friends who Rooster Teeth are, they can be like, come over and watch this movie,
you know?
And it's sort of like, it's a good entry point.
They're also across so many different platforms now.
Yeah.
I mean, different mediums, different, like, they're killing it. As a production company, they're, like, killing it.
Yeah. But look, like, overall, it was pretty funny. I'd give it like a solid 7 out of 10, maybe.
Mm. I can't believe that 5% of the population are Rooster Teeth fans.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Oh, it's crazy. We're their second, like, it's immense.
Because they have, what, like 21 million subscribers, I think, on YouTube.
Mm.
And they have like a more concentrated audience in Australia than they do in America.
Really?
That's what I was reading.
Like, per capita?
Yeah.
That's pretty good. That's...
Which is why, like, I guess it's all part of the thing that motivated them to have RTX
here.
Yeah.
It's
only a matter of time before...
Oh, there'll be a UK one, there'll be...
No, I was going to say before they base some kind of production in Australia, you know?
You reckon?
Oh, yeah. Like, you know, they did it with Funhouse in LA.
Oh, know? I see what you're saying.
Expand, you know, have now, some sort of presence.
There are more fans... Listen to this. There are more fans of Rooster Teeth... Then there are followers of Islam, Buddhism, Judaism, and Hinduism, Sikhism, together.
Isn't that incredible, though? Because so few people... I mean, there's still so many people who don't really know what Rooster Teeth are. Even actually,
I don't.
It was great taking Emma, my girlfriend, to Laser Team. She was very reluctant to go.
Yeah.
She views Rooster Teeth as this... Like, she just doesn't get it.
Yeah.
Even though she's seen the lines at PAX. She's like... I mean, we went to dinner with Jack Patillo and his wife Katie when we were in America. Like, so she sort of knows them, but she still just kind of, whenever there's something that talks about, she just goes, no, I don't get it. They do videos on the internet. She did not want to go to the movie, and she loved it.
That's great.
And by then, she was like, look, it was a very funny movie. And now she kind of has context for, like, she knows who Gavin and Michael, two of the Achievement Hunters, were.
Yeah.
She's kind of got a context for the people who were in the movie.
I think it was great.
It made me appreciate... It's pretty clever.
I'm really glad that they wrote a film, decided to make a film, and, like, didn't... I'm not glad that they didn't outsource, because it means that other actors didn't get an opportunity, but I like that they kept it, the cast... as Rooster Teeth employees.
Although it's a nice half-half balance. Because the Rooster Teeth employees are good, but I still think it's some of the non-Rooster Teeth employees that are probably some of the better actors.
Look,
better comedians. Like, bigger laughs, yeah. Really.
I'm sorry to keep bringing up statistics, but more people are fans of Rooster Teeth than there are Catholics, Anglicans, than any religious group in Australia. No religious group in Australia has more followers than Rooster Teeth.
I suppose that makes sense, though, because, I mean, you can't be... I mean, all of those religions can all watch Rooster Teeth.
Yeah.
But they can't also be in multiple religions.
Even if you...
pick one, but you can watch multiple channels on YouTube. Like, if you can only subscribe to one thing on YouTube,
that's hilarious.
That statistic would be different. Look, let's go to some music. This is the Gerudo Ritual from the Ocarina of Time. Corey Johnston, we'll be back after this to talk show and tell. What a sudden ending. What a sudden and edgy ending to that Gerudo Valley cover.
It's exactly how I remember it. That's the actual original version from the 64.
In fact, I think that version has less wah-wah pedal than
because you could get a lot more wah-wah on the 64-bit cartridges.
Because like the original Ocarina of Time, it was actually wah-wah pedal of time.
They changed it for Western audiences because wah-wah wasn't so big outside of Japan at the time.
Let's talk show and tell, guys. I've got a big one.
I've got a big one this week.
The Division beta just came out, and I have been playing countless hours of that game.
How many hours?
Countless. I couldn't possibly count, Carlo.
Oh.
Thus the word countless. It's met my expectations, and in many instances exceeded them.
You excited for the full game?
Because I had very low expectations for the last month. Yeah, I think I really am now. I think the beta's given me a good idea of what to expect.
See, it's a game that I have vowed. It's one of those games. Sometimes I make vows about particular games. Mm-hmm. I made a vow that I would never visit New York until I had played
The Division.
The Division, and I was so familiar with the map of Division that when I go to New York, I couldn't get lost.
You know what, though? I mean, it's obviously scaled down to an extent,
mm-hmm.
but I think you can do that from what I've seen of it. I mean, New York, of all the cities in the world, New York is such a precise, like, grid. I mean, the layout of that city, it is everything is numbered, you know, with First Street and
stuff. It's a big grid.
So to learn that grid and to know, you know, where things are in terms of the placement of that
Which
grid.
Which subway tunnel is going to get me out of some trouble?
But you know what? That is, like, details, even though, like, in the beta, you only get a small section of the map, but those details are still great. To the point where I went to Madison Square Garden.
Oh, wow.
And
the stadium or the subway station?
The stadium. And I found the subway station that my girlfriend and I arrived at to go to Madison Square Garden. We were there last year.
Did it feel geographically right?
Yeah. I mean, like, it does feel like slightly smaller.
Sure.
You know? Especially when you go in there, like, it's not as big, but the layout, the architecture, the design.
That's so cool.
It's all spot on.
And it's still all very fresh. Like, that city's very fresh in my mind still.
Yeah.
Really cool.
I mean, New York is a city that has been adapted and put into so many games, but in this, it feels the most authentic, I think.
That's now it becomes
really,
our battleground.
That's so exciting.
Mm. But boy, guys, I'll tell you what. Like, so what I would say to people still looking forward to this who haven't played the beta is get rid of the idea in your head that this is going to be a, like 100% open, free, you can do whatever you want. Like, it is at its core like a third-person squad shooter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the best way I would describe it is it's like Destiny meets Ghost Recon.
Cool.
Except it is one seamless map.
You can still wander around that big map and there's still a bunch of stuff
you
to
totally
do,
can. Right? And it gets a bunch of stuff right that Destiny didn't. I mean, like, it rewards exploration. You know, it passed the test for me that, like, I counted how many alleyways, like, that grabbed my attention and I went to explore. I counted how many of them actually had something to reward that exploration. And 5 out of 5.
Oh, really?
There was something there. That's collectible, really good. A doorway that I could open that, and then like go up and explore like random apartments.
That's so cool.
Some you can climb up some fire escapes and find stuff.
It's like real life.
But then it is also like a classic Ubisoft open world. You know, you've got main stories, collectibles. There's random events. Like, you know, you might find that a bunch of looters have taken a hostage, and you kind of have this spontaneous like, okay, let's go. You know, so there's heaps of stuff to just sort of.
I like that a lot.
Stumble upon. So I guess, like, in terms of the gameplay, it does feel like an open-world Ghost Recon, but then the RPG stuff is the character building and...
Cool.
You know.
Yeah, I'm on board. That sounds great.
Boy. It's great.
A lot of good times?
Yeah, a lot of good times.
Did you have any laughs?
I had a few laughs. Not in the Dark Zone. Dark Zone is a terrifying, nightmarish place where you'll really learn who you are as a person.
You'll meet yourself.
Yeah, it's also
the abyss.
Like,
the abyss stares back.
Actually, another great thing, and I'll end on that so we can move on, is the online integration is way better than Destiny. You know, Destiny, it's just like you go to the big social space and it's everyone dancing like a lunatic. Mm-hmm. And you go to a level and it's just like a barren wasteland where there's only enemies.
Yeah.
In this, it's sort of like, so it has the social areas where you see all the random players. When you're in just the non-PvP free roam, it's just you and enemies, right? If anyone on your friends list plays, though, it loads them into your same world. So when you look on the map, like, if you have a couple of friends who are also just exploring New York,
they'll be in the
you
same
see map. All their dots in real time on the map. Cool. And you go, oh, such and such is there. You can either join group, which just instantly teleports you to them and then sort of fire teams up with them, or you can just put a waypoint and, like, kind of manually make your way to them. And I feel like when we play it, we've got to have, like, a no fast travel rule.
And just try,
like,
to find each other.
Like,
yeah
we've totally got to just, like, group up and sort of, like... Guys, we're going to have so much role-playing fun with this game.
Oh,
so
boy! Excited.
That's going to be great.
We're going to make character names, call signs. Actually, another great thing is there's random civilians that wander around in the city. And you can give them supplies that you've collected, and they'll drop you a bit of loot, like maybe a bit of clothing or, like, customizable stuff.
So... there, okay, so that was going to be my question. Like, are there any other... like, is the city... it doesn't feel alive, does it? Because everyone's gone.
No, it kind of does, actually. I mean, everyone's gone, but there's just sort of, like, there's the remnants of people. You know? So, like, when I was walking around this afternoon, there was a guy just yelling abuse at me from a window, and I went up and shot the windowsill, and he went, and closed the window, and, like, went down and hid.
So there are people sort of still living there.
Yeah. Yeah, and you kind of... It's sort of like the Batman games, where there's... it's sort of been overrun by...
something, yeah.
Because this event, or whatever it is that's happened, has only happened, like, I think a week ago.
Oh,
before
shit.
The time of this...
yeah. That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's really, really cool.
It's a cool premise. It was like it was a virus that was spread through contaminated money on the Black Friday sales. So everyone went out and spent all this contaminated money spread this disease.
I'm really excited.
And so it's like a week after that outbreak.
I'm super
excited. So there's like... abandoned, like, shopping centres filled with Christmas decorations and stuff.
It's going to be fun.
It's pretty great.
Great input.
All right. What about you guys?
Well, I want to talk about an interesting article that The Guardian had this week. We're no stranger to often talking about the sometime, I guess, derisory tone that a lot of mainstream publications take when it comes to video games. You know, very often it's like, why are video games ruining children's eyes? And things like that, you know, like...
leave my eyes alone, video games! Yeah.
But yeah, there was a really interesting two-part article in The Guardian this week. It was by a tech writer for them. Three writers, actually. Kate Gray, Holly Nielsen, and Jordan Erica Weber. And it was basically just 30 characters that they thought were really excellent female characters in video games. And the idea was it was characters that you don't really hear very much about. So who are these characters beyond Lara Croft and things? And they had a whole range of different things. They had Shell from Portal. They had the villain from Portal too.
Gladys.
Gladys, yeah. And then they'd have other characters like Hannah Smith from Her Story, which came out last year, or Elena Fisher from the Uncharted series. And then it also had some really interesting...
Had Clementine, who I think is probably one of my favourite characters in a game ever.
The character from Mirror's Edge. Mm-hmm. And there was... The interesting decision that I thought was one of the characters in the list was the Dragon Age Inquisition protagonist.
Which is a weird one, because it's the character that you create.
Which is cheating, I think.
Yeah, they said that
the characters... as good as you make them, really.
But also, I felt that if you were going to pick any of the characters from those games... from those BioWare games, you would have picked Commander Shepard. It's just one voice actor, Jennifer Hale. She's amazing. Whether you're like a really warm, open, trusting Commander Shepard, whether you're a really hard-assed, take no renegade. Chances, renegade, or whether you're like a war hero. Jennifer Hale's voice acting just really captured all of those. Yeah. You could sometimes be sympathetic, sometimes be very enigmatic.
It's also the only instance I can think of where a game that has, you know, male or female protagonist, like the overwhelming fan love of the female version compelled them to make an alternate cover where she was actually on the cover.
Yeah.
Because even like, you know, Fallout or like any other, you know, choice-based protagonist game still uses the male to advertise, including Dragon Age.
Yeah. Although, with Dragon Age, to their credit, it is fairly ambiguous, because they did make a very big point of not having boob armor in that game.
Yeah.
So, it's, you know, could easily be a man or a woman on the cover of Dragon Age.
I mean, can we get rid of boob armor altogether?
Yeah. But there was a really interesting article about how it was actually... far worse as armor, because the design would mean that if you fell forward it would crush your sternum.
Oh yeah.
Because it's there's a divot, and like also, any blows that you get onto your chest would go into you.
Also, yeah, it would have to be thinner on the boob parts of the armor for them to kind of bang it out. Like, there's no way it would be as sturdy and thick as
Just not good armor design.
It's not good.
So it was a really great list. It's worth checking it out on The Guardian. But
maybe check it twice. Hey?
Okay, mate.
Christmas is a long time ago.
I'm so sorry, guys. Not in The Division. It's eternal.
I wonder if they'll do holiday DLC. And you have Easter
day, and then right back to Christmas.
Look, before we move on, very, very quickly, I wanted to bring this up. Have you guys heard about this new Pokemon game, Great Detective Pikachu?
Yeah. I was watching it on Kotaku the other day.
Absolutely. Isn't that the weirdest looking game? But what this game is basically a detective mystery game where you play Pikachu.
The detective.
Who is fully voice acted.
Shut up.
He just talks and, like, solves crimes.
Yeah.
Like, is there a trailer for it?
Yeah, and in the trailer, it's got, like, a husky Japanese voice is Pikachu. Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
That's really weird.
That's one to watch. That is one to watch. We're going to go to a song. This is Eyes of the Wolf. Wow. From The Witcher 3. We're going to come back after this to talk about Ganondorf.
Here we go!
Well, we are back, and it's time for a brand new segment we've come up with called Character Select. Alright.
Oh, wow.
Here we go.
Look at these options.
So many characters.
So many to pick from.
Look, this is a segment where we
don't need more sounds to be added to this thing.
We pick a character from the gaming world to explore, to discuss, to examine, to figure out what their life would be like. The character we have chosen for this week is Ganondorf. There he is there. The only recorded piece of voice
Ganondorf.
Acting.
Brilliant.
From Ganondorf. There we go. I mean, what a storied character, you know? What a lineage there is of Ganondorf. He's lived through the ages. He has fought. He has died.
Terrified generations of Hylians, of pre-Hylians.
Yeah, how does that work? Doesn't he die? Like, I mean, look, he dies in...
No.
What do you mean, no, no, no?
Well,
no. Depends on, well...
I'm very ignorant when it comes to the whole...
Do we want to get into fiction?
Well, when it comes to the whole timeline of that franchise, I'm just like, I got no idea.
What they established for Ganondorf in the most recent sort of main Zelda game, Skyward Sword, is that there is an evil villain, because that takes place before all of them.
Yeah.
The evil villain in that, the Demon King Demise, when he gets defeated, puts a curse on the lineage of Link and Zelda, and basically says, oh, my ancestors are forever going to just screw with your ancestors.
Yeah.
You know.
Hence every other game.
So that's sort of, that's how Nintendo have, like, explained it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Ganondorf's woken up and in many ways hasn't had a choice over his own fate. I mean, he's just destined.
That's the real depressing part.
To mess with two people's lives.
And it is an interesting timeline because they, in the official chronology of the Zelda franchise, after Ocarina of Time, there are three possible outcomes that come out of the Ocarina of Time.
Yeah, we go.
And each
Majora's
of them leads
Mask
to different...
is a different timeline,
so, yeah,
isn't it?
Majora's Mask is that the Ganondorf seal was complete and the Hero of Time as a child ventured off, went into Majora's Mask and then Twilight Princess. Ganondorf broke through the seal of mirrors and then was imprisoned again.
Hell are you talking about?
Like, well, I'm gonna be honest. I knew what he was talking about, and I still got lost.
Oh, really?
But I think that's because of
my understanding was that after Legend of Zelda: Ocarina of Time, right?
Mm-hmm.
He gets turned back into a kid.
Yeah, and then there,
and
well,
then,
there are,
and then Majora's Mask happens. He wanders off with his.
In
with his
one timeline,
there are three timelines that come out of Ocarina of Time. One is Hero survives, Seal is strong. Then there's Hero survives, Seal is weak, and then there's Hero is defeated.
Okay.
And each of those leads to different games.
There are so many.
But if the hero is defeated...
On the Sacred Realm, where the Triforce is.
Yeah, where they seal Ganondorf.
What was the game, the third scenario happened?
So in the third scenario, it's Link dies during Ocarina of Time.
After killing Ganondorf. We never see that. So it didn't happen.
But, I mean,
it's an alternate.
But I feel like you're not understanding the principle of alternate realities.
Have you ever played the final battle of Ocarina of Time and lost? Because I have. And in that situation, that's what happens.
Never done it. I'm a Dead Set Legend video games.
I hate...
Guys, let's not get... This isn't about Link.
Sorry,
Link gets enough glory as it is. Let's
talk
about
Ganondorf.
Ganondorf, I mean, this poor bastard, you know?
No, mate, he's evil in that.
He's been executed. Well, I mean,
Man
you say
from
that.
The West.
You know, that's how he is described on his wiki page.
Evil in that.
When they just... Hang on, I'll find it. Personality. Ganondorf is commonly portrayed as the incarnation of pure evil, greed, and power. Yeah. Like that's a heavy burden to wear on your on your broad, manly shoulders.
It's a tricky situation. You know, he rose up in like a tribe of thieves in the desert.
Mm.
You know, he became the leader of it, and then rose up to become the advisor to the king. I'm always intrigued how he like what the link between those two was. You know,
the link between.
Where do you go from being the king of a group of thieves to being the advisor to the king of Hyrule?
Oh, he just bloody worked at it, and
I'd like to see that HBO series.
Yeah, totally.
Think about the House of Cards of Ganondorf. Every now and then, you know that scene in Ocarina where he looks at the window and Zelda's looking.
Yeah.
That's when he does the monologue. I came a long way across the desert to be here. Kevin Spacey, Ganondorf,
done. He would totally have a southern accent as well, I reckon, Ganondorf.
Yeah, Gerudo is just like the Texas of...
Yeah. I like that.
Would have been nice if you didn't bite us up for some of that iced tea.
It does say, I mean, you mentioned that, Carl. It does say here in his wiki, they've done a very interesting character study of him. They say they presume that he has some sense of honor based on two things. That he mentions at some point that his plan... That the reason he wanted to get the Triforce of Power was so that he can make life better for the Gerudos, which he never does.
No.
He doesn't actually. Like, their desert's still pretty rough in the future. You know,
That's because Link bloody put an end to it. We never know what was going to happen.
Yeah.
That could have been the beacon of, like, technology. But the other thing is that they say that Ganondorf had several times where he could have just killed Link, but he sort of respected his balls. His brass tacks, basically.
See, I feel like
nah. The
Hylians need to check their privilege a little bit.
You reckon?
Yeah.
Nah, Ganondorf kidnapped the princess, all right?
They've
a princess, but what has the princess ever done for Gerudo? I mean, it's still part of their domain.
They're bandits, mate. Don't be a bandit.
They cut down the bridge to Gerudo.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Maybe they wouldn't be bandits if they had, you know, trade.
supply lines, access to clean water. You know,
they didn't live in a desert. Meanwhile, over at bloody Lake Hyla, water for days.
Yeah,
there's Zora's a bloody hog in the water.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Gorons are just like, I don't care, I'll eat all these rocks. I mean, they don't... What do Gorons do to help, you know?
Yeah, he's right.
Look, I reckon, guys, he's I reckon right. The average Goron doesn't even know where Gerudo is.
And the Gerudos, they respect military strength, they respect honour, you know? Because once Link defeats them,
okay,
they're fine.
But also, so the other compelling thing about Ganondorf to me is that, I mean, have you guys been to Gerudo? It's like 100% women.
Mm.
So Ganondorf is like the one man to come out of Gerudo.
Mm, mm, mm.
That must have been a tough existence too. I mean, his idea of gender politics would be completely different. And then he comes into the real world where women aren't respected, where all the heroes are men.
Yeah, right.
I mean, that's a tough life.
Yeah,
he
might be trying to bring down the patriarchy.
Yeah.
You ever think about that, Bardia?
By taking down their female ruler. Although he starts with the king.
I wonder what happens to the king.
Do we ever see the king?
That you find a soldier. When you come into Hyrule Castle Town, just after you've gotten the ocarina from Zelda and she's fled the city, if instead of going immediately to the temple, you go left down that back alley, you find a soldier who's like, Ganondorf attacked everybody, we were overwhelmed. He dies.
The king dies.
The soldier dies in the alley. He's like, we tried to defend the king, but we lost.
That's really heavy.
That's one of the things though, that I loved about Wind Waker, that you actually talk to the king of Hyrule.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From those heady days. And I kind of like, I mean, that's what I thought was good about that character, because he kind of doesn't have a chance in the series before then to give you his perspective. And so it's sort of like he kind of takes on the burden of the fall of Hyrule himself a little bit.
Well, he drowned Hyrule, didn't he? He petitioned the gods to drown Hyrule.
Pretty much to try and to take over, to, you know,
stop evil from rising. Evil finds a way.
Why did Ganondorf kidnap Zelda?
Because she had one part of the Triforce.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay, cool.
Gotcha. Ding, check.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at it. If you guys could say anything to Ganondorf now, what would it be?
What's your last name?
I can tell you his last name, actually. I'm glad you asked that. I read it here, because I didn't know this. His first appearance, the first time we see him is Ocarina of Time. He's actually first mentioned in Link to the Past.
Steve Davies.
His name is Ganondorf Dragmire.
Dragmire. All right, shut up.
Dragmire.
When's he mentioned in Link to the Past?
He's mentioned in Link to the Past. They tell a story about a thief who broke into the Sacred Realm to steal the Triforce. A group of men, they were called Ganon. His name was Ganondorf, and then he stole the Triforce, and it mutated him into a beast. That's the story. So they kind of, like, when they did Ocarina of Time, it's like they were telling the story that was sort of mentioned in Link to the Past, which I didn't know.
Now you do. Dragon, what was it?
But it's funny, Dragmire, isn't it, that there had been, like, because what was Link to the Past, was that the second Zelda game or the third Zelda game?
Link to the Past. First one.
No, it wasn't the first one.
No, because it was Zelda, then Zelda 2. So I think mine's the third game.
Yeah. It's interesting that, like, here we go, third installment of the Zelda series.
Well, so the first one was just, of course it was.
Yeah, just Legend of Zelda, Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link.
I would say Ganondorf, what's your deal, man?
Why are you so angry?
Yeah.
What happened, buddy?
Who are your parents? Tell us about them.
Who are his parents?
Mr. and Mrs. Dragonface.
Also, the only green skin Dragmire in the entire... I mean, is he Gerudo? Because the other Gerudos don't have the green skin.
Maybe.
He doesn't have green skin, does he?
Yeah, he does. He has, like, green skin and red hair.
Why do we have to talk about the skin colour? Why is that?
It's interesting that he's the only person who looks like that in that entire world. Again, I mean, the same thing happened to the main character from the musical Wicked.
Oh,
maybe he wasn't just...
Guys,
evil.
I just had a thought.
Why is he so big?
I just had a crazy thought. He and Link are like the same backstory.
Here we go.
They were both abandoned with a group of people as children. They went on totally different, divergent paths. Maybe,
was Link really
given time travel is a thing that exists in the Ocarina of Time, maybe
is
Ganon
Link.
Is Link.
Oh my god, dude. Mind blown.
That's there pretty we cool. Go. That's there pretty cool. Go.
This
That's
is what
cool.
I'm talking about.
Hang on.
This is your life.
Hang on. Yeah, all right. No, don't hang on. That's all right.
No, go on, buddy.
Well, no, like, I'm just, you know.
You're catching up with the rest
of us? I'm just catching up. That's pretty
Maybe
cool.
That look out the window isn't a sinister look of, you know, like, things to come.
Maybe it's him going
recognition,
remembering it. Yeah.
Recognition.
When did fourth timeline game to split off from from Ocarina?
It doesn't make any sense. Nothing makes sense anymore.
Because when you fight Link in Twilight Princess, the Link from Ocarina of Time, or the Link from Majora's Mask.
What?
Yeah, you know how you learn sword techniques in Twilight Princess?
Go on.
That is meant to be Link from Majora's Mask.
Majora's or Ocarina?
Majora's Mask.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so after... Well, from Ocarina of Time, went to Majora's Mask. Never... like abandoned Hyrule, was cursed, and so is now teaching his sword techniques onto you, the new Link. And your armor in that looks very similar to Ganondorf's armor.
That's true.
Boom.
I can't. It's too much. It's just, I mean,
we're down the rabbit hole.
It's another thing. There's a scene in Ocarina of Time where if you look at Ganondorf real closely, he's got Link's face just tattooed on his butt.
Yeah, if you go down, instead of going directly to the Temple of Time, if you go down one of the alleys, there's a guy there and says, "Ganondorf is you from the future."
Is it the guy from Back to the Future?
Okay, here's another theory.
We have to go back.
Here's another theory.
Kate, we have to go back.
He's not Link, he's Tingle. Have you ever seen Tingle and Ganondorf in the same scene at the same time?
That's true.
I mean,
just think, parents never respected him, lived with him till he was
40, like, you know,
never got a fairy and sort of became bitter, vengeful against anyone who has a fairy.
Mm-hmm.
Bang.
Where's Ganondorf's fairy?
Exactly. Tingle doesn't have a fairy, that's the point.
Mm. That's true.
I feel like you misunderstood that.
I do, I'm misunderstanding a lot of what's going on.
Deary me. Well, look, I think
that
is a character who has been well and truly examined.
Should we roast him? Should we throw a couple of jokes his way?
Roast him? Okay, yeah. Okay, what have you got, buddy?
Oh, really? Throw me
out. Just give us one.
Ganondorf.
Hey, Ganondorf. What's up with you there? What are you going to do next? Be a worse person than you are?
roasted. Carlo, what you got?
So, just got off the phone to Mario and Luigi. They're wondering where their third, bigger, uglier, less mustachioed brother is.
Hey. Oh, boom.
Ben?
Hey, Ganondorf. What's the matter? Executed again? Bang.
Whoa.
Get heavy?
Okay.
It got dark.
The other thing is,
I mean,
it's the same...
He's doing his best.
The other characters, it's different versions of them, but it's the one Ganondorf. So he has accumulated life experience.
What do you mean it's the one Ganondorf? He dies.
He gets reincarnated every time.
By whom?
Have you played a Zelda game before, buddy?
Yes,
explain in every game where he comes from.
What game is he in after Ocarina of Time?
Wind Waker?
Like many games.
Twilight Princess? The next one. What's the next one?
Twilight Princess?
How does he get... Who reincarnates him there? Huh?
There's like a whole cutscene where they explain...
That's most of the game.
Didn't play.
The whole point is him being reincarnated.
I didn't play Twilight Princess. Or anything after Ocarina of Time. Majora's Mask, but he's not even in that.
I'm just disgusted, Carlo. It's taking all my strength to hold back the volumes of vomit that I just want to just heave across this
desk.
When
you stare into the abyss, Aben.
Aben. The abyss.
All right, guys,
back.
Let's go to some music. This is No Life Goes Forever Unbroken. We're going to come back and we're going to review Banner Saga. All right, and we are back. Let's finish off this show with a spanking review of Banner Saga. Carlo, you've raved about this game for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
It's been on PC for a while. There's already a sequel in the works, and it's just hit consoles now.
That's right, yeah. It came out on consoles about 2 weeks ago. The price is the same as it is on PC, which is interesting because it hasn't changed too much from Steam. So you can pick it up for about, I think it's about $26,
$27. Yeah.
Bargain.
I have been a big fan of this game since it came out. I didn't crowdsource it because I didn't hear about the game until it was released. But it's just a great game. It's produced by some of the original... developers from BioWare. They formed their own studio called Stoic Games, and this is their first offering, and it's just a really pure role-playing experience. The combat is very simple, like very simple turn-based combat system with some sort of finesse around it, and it's very tactics-based, so you know, the more you play, the better you get at sort of moving troops around, using them on the battlefield. But the real fun from it is just these story decisions that you're constantly having to make. Almost every couple of minutes, you'll have to make a new decision, which will just drastically affect the game.
So the main story, right? So it's sort of about, I mean, I've only played about an hour and a half or so of it. But it's basically sort of Norse mythology, or like a Norse folktale.
Yeah, it's got this, it's like a Norse aesthetic. And the language that I think they are using in it is very similar, if not is Norse. So you'll there's a town, for example, that you probably just got up to, Ben, called Veddafell.
Yeah.
Which means bad weather. And you can figure that out if you speak English, you know, like you can go, yeah. Oh, fell weather, bad weather, you know. Yeah, so it's got that Norse aesthetic, but then it has fantasy elements. So the idea is that you're in this world where there are humans and this other race called the Vaal, and the Vaal were created by the gods, but the gods have now died, and so the Vaal are the last of their kind. Like, that's really no, cool. There are no yeah. more Vaal. You
know? And the Vaal basically just look like really big, beefy, tough Vikings, but then they've got horns.
Yeah,
they're basically like, they're kind of like Kunari, I guess.
Yeah, they're giants. They're about two... or three people high. And the game is great. Like, I think it's so good at setting that initial atmosphere of this sort of bleak...
Are they evil?
...Norse wilderness. The Vaal? Yeah. No, they're good.
No, okay.
And, you know, I won't get too much into the story of the game, but it's very compelling. You know, from the very get-go, you have this very simple introduction. You move constantly with who you're playing as, who your perspective is. But,
which is a nice touch, I think.
Yeah.
Like, I love how a lot of these narrative games, the more games we're getting now that are purely narrative-driven rather than, like, you know, incidental gameplay-driven, they're being a lot freer with perspective from story. Like, having multiple protagonists, not being afraid to kill a character off or just totally shake up the dynamic. Just putting the story before, you know, who you're playing as.
Yeah. Yeah, and like I said, this game, I spoke about it last week as well on the show. The decisions in this are so profound, you know, like they're so simple and they have drastic changes that are created in the game. So just for example, this is the third time I've played through the game and I made one different choice, which I guess I've always made the same choice in this one decision tree. And met an entirely new character who I've never seen before in the game.
That's so cool.
Just never seen them. And then another choice later on in the game, two new characters who I'd never seen before. And I've two characters who in my other playthroughs were there all the way till the end, dead in this game, you know?
So what's the... I mean, you mentioned like the battlefield sort of combat gameplay element of it. How does that work? What does that look like?
So it's a grid-based combat system. And so you have a set amount of movement, and then you have one attack per player, basically.
Oh, like so it's like XCOM. It's like
it is,
how
yeah.
many spaces you can move.
Mm-hmm,
yeah,
mm-hmm,
cool.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. And is it like cutscenes? Is it like graphic novel-y?
It's this,
kind of both. Like sort
yeah,
of.
It's
there's only like annoyingly, and you pointed this out last week too, Carlo, that you have like a voice acted intro cutscene. And then that's the only voice acting in the game?
Well, there's actually... There are some little bits of voice acting, which I can't remember, honestly, being in the original. So maybe they're part of the console game, but there are little other snippets of voice acting in the game, which I hadn't remembered. The other good thing that they've introduced in the console that I don't remember being in the original is that before every battle, you get to choose who is fighting in that battle. Which I'm sure wasn't in the original game. I'm sure you always had to go to camp and restructure your heroes. So that's a really very, very handy feature. The only thing that I am finding a little frustrating with the console version is the very slow loading times. Mm. And that really does... When you've got this game that is this constant... There's this real sense of purpose and forward momentum in the game. And so when that's constantly being interrupted by... they're short. They're maybe 15, 30, 20 seconds.
This is a bunch of them.
But it's just like every time you go into a menu, this loading screen comes on. Every time you go out of a menu, the loading screen. Time you enter a new turn. So just enough to just slightly pull you out and take you away from that momentum.
And in a game that is technically not that extreme. Like, you would think that it would be easier to pull that off without those loading screens.
Yeah, it does surprise me that they have that much loading time required. Mm. But, you know, it is a really fun game. One of the other the cool features of the console is that you don't have a hard save. So you're constantly auto-saving, so you can't change your decisions.
Go back if someone dies.
On Steam, you could... on the PC, you could quickly jump back and make a change to a decision.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you have to be really quick to do
that. I like
that.
I think that's a really good decision.
Yeah.
They're just locked in. So I can't wait to just finish this and play another game.
Yeah, that's
you kept saying, like, just outside before, how, like, you really don't think you're going to get through this way.
I've made some terrible decisions. And it's a game that it makes sometimes just really easy decisions that you stuff up can have huge impacts, and then it just snowballs.
That's how it should be. Exactly how it should be.
Totally.
So look, I'm getting the sense this is a pretty strong recommendation from you.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely recommend checking it out, and let us know how many people live in, you know, because I'm losing so many.
Very, very
well.
Rapidly.
There we go. Banner Saga. It is on PC. It is on consoles. From what I'm reading here, it's on Vita as well, which is a good one.
I've got one of those.
I kind of wish I'd known that now, because it would have been way better for me on Vita than.
I might get it on Vita.
Console.
Actually,
we good.
Do it.
Here we go. Well, look,
maybe we'll.
That's us for another week. Eh? We've ended the show. What do you know?
Well, there you go.
The weirdest way to end the show.
You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, BigHeadMode2BLA, and the website BigHeadMode.com.au. That's where all the podcasts are at, as well as iTunes.
That's what this is.
While you're on iTunes, give us a like, give us a subscribe, give us a favorite,
and
give us a bell, give us a...
Yeah, give us a chance.
Just give us money.
Give
us money.
You're an idiot.
I am. We're going to play out with Diablo 3 Overture from the...
What game?
Diablo 3.
But the song's from which game?
I hate Bardia. I hate Bardia so much.
Have a good weekend, everyone.
Next week, hating Bardia some more. See you guys next week.
Which game? What game?